No, I'm jealous. I glance over my shoulder at him again and meet James's blue eyes. He shrugs, looking a bit pathetic. Like maybe he is actually sorry. I turn back around and put my phone in my pocket, trying to think things over. I know I don't want to be with Realm, not like that. But honestly, James is a little much for me to handle, especially when he seems to like and then dislike me on a daily basis. God, if I just had my memories, I'd understand everything so much more. I'd know what happened to my brother, to me and James. I'd know who my friends are. I'd know what happened with my parents. There's so much that is just out of my reach, but if I could only... The bell rings, startling me. I get up slowly, trying to decide my next move. Just then, I see James walk by, a small smile on his lips as he passes. See you around, Sloane, he says, too quietly for anyone else to hear. And I know from the way my body reacts that Realm was right. I loved James. But maybe we're better off this way. At the end of the day, I wander around the halls for a bit, examining everyone as I pass them, trying to discern if I had possibly known them. I'm still getting headaches, but nothing like the one I had last night. I wonder if my brain has nearly finished repairing itself.
Took you long enough.
I stop a few feet from my locker to see James standing there, looking bored in the now deserted hallway. What are you doing? I ask.
I am sneaking around with you. Let's go.
He motions toward the back door.
No.
You were pretty quick to dismiss my feelings last night. Something about not pretending that things were ever good.
He smiles. I say stupid things, Sloane, all the time. But maybe the thought of not talking to you again made me crazy. Maybe I couldn't even sleep. And maybe I'm trying to make it up to you.
By possibly getting me in more trouble?
That's the idea.
And I can't help it. I laugh. The devious spark in James's eyes makes me think that trouble from the program is exactly what he wants. Is that what I'd liked about him before? His defiance? If anyone sees us together, they're going to call my mom, and then she'll call the program, I say.
Then we should hurry up and get out of sight. You ready?
I debate whether I want to purposely break the rules even more. Realm told me to stay alive, to stay safe. This could jeopardize both.
You will have so much fun with me, James whispers.
Yeah?
I'll try like hell.
I sigh, taking one more cautious look around the hallway, and then before anyone can notice, I grab my stuff and follow James out of the school. Chapter 12.
See you have your dad's car again, I say as we drive.
Stole it. He doesn't like me to take it anymore. Something tells me that he never did, but he was trying to be nice after I got back from the program.
I twist my hands in my lap, not sure if I should bring up our past relationship. I notice as he drives that James has the string from my shirt still around his pinky.
Where are we going? I ask.
There's this spot I found the other day. It's beautiful. I wanted to show someone, but, well, I don't really have any friends.
Maybe it's your sparkling personality.
He laughs. Come on, Sloane. I'm not that bad, am I?
You're awful.
His smile fades as he seems to think, taking us past fields and pastures.
I don't like getting hurt, he says. I remember that, even from being a kid. I think it has to do with my mother leaving, even if I don't know why or how, but I like to keep everything at a distance. That way it can't destroy me.
You must have let Brady in, I say quietly. He must have let me in once too.
James nods. And now that relationship is gone, and it kind of hurts. Knowing that I had something that isn't there anymore, it's like a hole in my chest.
Sometimes I think that pain might kill me.
I understand what he means. This emptiness that doesn't seem to have a reason. Something that can't be filled in. I know now what Realm meant when he said keeping one or two memories could drive you mad.
James exhales heavily and then goes to turn on the radio. You're ruining the fun, Sloane. This was supposed to cheer us up.
You're right. I settle back in the seat and watch him for a minute, liking the easy, calm expression on his face, especially when I know there's something darker underneath, and that maybe the other side of that darkness is fierce love. A love he had for me.
James turns onto a two-lane street, and I notice his arm again, the white scars that are there. Absently, I reach out and run my index finger over them, and he takes in a quick breath.
Sorry, I say, dropping my hand. I'm just wondering what they're from.
It's okay, he says. When I got back, I asked my dad about them. He said I had had an ugly tattoo and the program removed it. Strange, right? That they'd just take ink off my body. If I'd known they were going to do that, I might have gotten a special message for them tattooed on my ass.
Graphic?
He laughs.
Sorry.
James looks at me, his eyes traveling over me like he's trying to figure me out. It felt nice, he says quietly, when you touched me like that. Butterflies flutter in my stomach, but James goes back to watching the road. I reach out again, my fingers trembling slightly as I run them carefully over his scars, tracing the patterns there. I watch as his shoulders relax and his mouth softens into a smile. His skin is so warm, and I think that I must have liked touching him before. I lean forward and press a gentle kiss onto his scars. And then I straighten and look out the passenger window, desire filling my entire body.
I kissed it and made it all better, I say.
And it's quiet until James responds, "Yes, you did." My pulse has mostly calmed when James pulls up next to a grassy hill. He shuts off his car and then reaches into the back to grab a blanket.
"This is it," he says, sounding pleased.
I stare out the window, my heart in my throat.
"What's wrong?" he asks.
"It's..." I try to catch my breath. Push away the sadness.
"We're at the river," I say.
"I know it's a little cold out, but this place is gorgeous," he tells me, as if I need convincing. As if this is the first time I've been here. I look over at him, tears in my eyes.
"I know," I say. "Brady used to take me here all the time."
James's face falters, and he glances down at the towel in his hands. I can see him searching for the memories, and I know the minute he can't find them.
"Sorry," he murmurs. "We should..."
"No," I say. "I love this place, honestly." And I mean it. If I was ever going to feel close to my brother, it would be here. James seems comforted by this as he climbs out of the car. He waits for me before walking over the grass.
The river is breathtaking. The sun glitters off the surface as tiny ripples wrap around the bigger rocks on the side.
"This is even better than I remember," I say.
"I was hoping you'd like it."
I look sideways at him.
"You thought of me?"
He shrugs, and I wonder if he didn't mean to admit that out loud. We face the slow-moving water, birds chirping above us as the trees close us in, making the area intimate. Private. I'd spent years in this spot, years watching my brother jump into the river. He loved it here, and the fact that James does too only confirms that they were close, that we'd all spent a lot of time together. James spreads out the blanket, and then when I'm next to him, we sit quietly, arms resting on our bent knees as we watch the water. And for a minute, I feel like I'm home. Not my actual house, which is currently strangling me with the lies that I've been told, but my true home, here at the river with James, with the memories of Brady. I have the urge to rest my head on James's shoulder, but I don't think I should. James shifts and his body bumps mine, knocking me sideways. He mumbles a half-hearted apology and then lies back, putting his hands behind his head as he stares up at the clouds. I settle next to him, looking around us, the cool breeze sending goosebumps over my skin. It's so peaceful here that I don't think I ever want to leave. After some time passes, James yawns dramatically. "Hey," he says, "you want to go swimming?" He looks over at me, squinting his blue eyes against the sun. "It's cold, and besides, I don't know how to swim."
"Seriously?"
I nod. James sits up, curling his leg underneath him, an expression of disbelief on his face.
"Well, that's just goddamn sad, Sloane. What are you, 5? Get undressed. I'm teaching you right now."
I laugh. "First, no, I'm afraid of water. And second, why am I getting undressed again?"
His lips curve up. "You don't have to be scared. I won't let you drown."
My heart is pounding at the thought of getting in the water, but James isn't helping to calm me down. "And the clothing option?" I ask.
"That would just be for fun. I promised fun, remember?"
I shove him then, laughing as I do. James stands, towering over me as I lie on my side, staring up at him.
"Come on," he says seriously. "Come in the water with me. I'll take my clothes off too."
"Something tells me you just really want me to see you naked."
"Maybe you'll be impressed."
Oh my God. James has a talent for making me forget the world around us, for making it all feel normal. I'm sure that's why I loved him, or at least part of why. Even though it's barely 60 degrees outside, James pulls his shirt over his head, the muscles corded and strong over his body. He pulls down his shorts and stands in just his boxer briefs, windmilling his arms as he stretches. He glances over at me.
"See? You look impressed."
I smile. "Maybe a little."
"Do you need help with your shirt?"
"No, I think I'll keep it on. But I will enjoy watching you freeze your ass off."
"So impressed," he says over his shoulder as he walks to the water.
He swims out to a small boat dock on the other side of the bank, waving to me once he's on it. Then he does a flip before splashing into the river below, reminding me of my brother when he does. His clothes lie in the grass, crumpled up. I consider hiding them, leaving him to drive home in a pair of wet boxer briefs. James is splashing, yelling in a shaky voice that he's not even cold. I pick up his jeans and fold them over my arm, looking toward the path. But when I start to walk, something falls out of his pocket. At first I worry that I lost his house key or something important, but then I spy an object a few feet away. When I recognize it, tingles race over my skin. I get down on my knees and crawl over to it. I drop James's pants and pick up what I'd so nearly lost. It's a ring. A pink plastic heart, similar to the one I'd found in my mattress. James must have given me the other one, and it must have meant something for me to save it. For a second, there's a hint of a memory, just a flash of me stuffing it into my bed, but I can't hold on to it. Instead, I start to cry. I clutch the ring to my chest and then fold over, my cheek on the grass. I'm not complete. I'm missing a huge piece of my heart, memories of things I must have said and done, things I can't have back. I want them, all of them. I want to be myself again.
Sloane?
James's voice is frantic. Drips of river water hit me before he kneels down on the grass beside me. His arms wrap around me, his skin cold against mine. "This ring," I say, holding it up to him. "Where did you get it?"
"After we texted last night, I went to Denny's to sulk. I saw it in a gumball machine there."
He reaches to take it from me, possessive of it. I felt bad for the things I said to you, and when I saw it, I don't know. I had to get it for you.
He studies my expression.
Is that dumb?
I shake my head. No, I think you've given it to me before, a different ring.
I smile, wiping at my cheeks.
But just as cheesy.
James's eyebrows pull together as he thinks, looking down at the ring in his hand. Then he takes my finger and slides the ring on. We both sit there, staring at it, trying to decide if it belongs there or not. When James and I look at each other again, we're both confused, unable to remember why this ring is so important to us.
Can I do something? James asks, still holding my hand.
What?
Can...
He pauses.
Can I kiss you, Sloane?
That was so not what I was expecting him to say. I don't answer at first, and James drops my hand and crawls closer to me, his face near mine as he's poised almost over me. My heart races as I stare back at him. He's so beautiful.
Please, he whispers. I really want to.
Something about the way he watches me, a knowing look that seems to see into my heart. I don't know, I say, my chest tightening as I let my feelings for him spread over me, leaving me unprotected and vulnerable. His expression grows serious, as if I'm refusing him. But then I put my hand on his cheek, the hand that wears his ring. Okay, yes, I say. James smiles quickly and then leans forward to press his mouth to mine, laying me back in the grass as he kisses me passionately. His lips are hot, and I dig my fingers into the bare skin of his back, kissing him like I've missed him my whole life. The way he moves, tastes, it's all so familiar and yet not. The sun lowers in the sky, the temperature dropping further. But it doesn't make us stop, every second lasting both forever and not long enough. And when we're thoroughly exhausted, still dressed, James collapses next to me, laughing out loud. This is the first time in almost 3 months that I've felt anything at all, he says.
Was it good?
Oh, yes, that was all sorts of good.
I slap his chest. I meant the feelings. Were they good? James moves then, rolling so that I'm under him. He brushes my hair away from my face. He's tender and defenseless, as if every part of him is exposed. He's not the asshole I thought he was, not even close. What I see is someone broken and fierce, someone loyal and hardened. Someone who could belong to me completely, and me to him. James smiles as he traces his finger over my mouth. I think... He stops and looks into my eyes, his stare arresting, pinning me in place.
I think I'm in love with you, he whispers. Is that crazy?
His words strike my heart, and the ache that's been a constant in my chest goes away completely. I lick my lips and smile. So crazy.
Then I guess I love you madly.
And then he leans down and kisses me again. Chapter 13. As we head back to town, we're quiet, but not uncomfortably so. James keeps my hand in his lap, playing with my fingers. His every touch is gentle yet possessive. I'm sure he feels the same way I do, as if we've done this before. I think about telling him about our past, but decide against it. I'm not sure how to say it without sounding like I made this happen somehow, manipulated him. I don't want him to think that. I want this all to be real. What do we do now? I ask him, because I know one of us has to ruin the moment. My parents will never let me date, and definitely not you. And then there's the program. I may not have a handler anymore, but Kevin was pretty adamant that I stay away from...
James's jaw tightens, but then he shakes his head.
I don't care what they think. I don't care what anyone thinks.
They can send you away again.
I'm not scared.
Worry pulses through me, and I lean over, putting my chin on his shoulder.
What if I'm scared for you?
James looks sideways at me. Aw, look at you being all sweet. Told you you'd be impressed.
He kisses me quickly, and then goes back to the road, as if that's the end of the conversation.
James, I say, feeling tension starting to settle in my shoulders. We've been gone most of the day. It was reckless. I'd pushed the idea away until now, enjoying the freedom of being with James instead. But now I know how stupid it was. I check my phone and see that I've missed 4 calls from my house and 1 from a private number.
My parents have been looking for me, I say.
Something in the tone of my voice makes him turn. I watch as his sun-kissed skin pales, his fingers tightening on the steering wheel.
What do you think they'll do? He asks.
And then I know it, feel it inside.
James, I say, choking up as the realization slides over me. My parents are the ones who sent me to the program in the first place. I think... And the idea is horrible. The fact that they betrayed me like that. I think my mother is the one who did this to me.
I can still see her face when I'd told her off the morning Kevin was waiting at the front door. And I know I've seen it before, that look of stubborn love that makes her think she's doing the right thing. Kevin took me to the program from my own house, which means my parents had to be in on it.
James's expression is pained, and he chews on his lip.
Call home, he says. Call home and put it on speaker.
What? Why?
So I can listen.
I'm terrified of what will happen. I check the clock and see that it's nearly 6. My fingers shake as I dial.
James glides the car into the empty lot of an abandoned farm and parks.
I blow out an unsteady breath, clicking on the speaker just as it starts to ring. My mother answers immediately, and I almost hang up.
Hi,
I say.
Sloan, where are you? We've been so worried.
In the background, there is a rustling, making me think she's covering up the receiver. I swallow hard.
I'm okay, I tell my mother. It was such a beautiful day, I thought I'd go swimming.
I need you to come home, honey, my mother says calmly. She doesn't acknowledge the fact that I can't swim. My breath is caught in my throat.
Hang up, James says then. Hang up the phone.
Who is that? My mother shouts quickly. Sloan, who are you with?
I click end and then lower the phone to my lap.
She wasn't alone, was she?
I ask, too devastated to look up.
No, I don't think so.
I let the realization hit me. I know my mother loves me. I'm sure I've always known that. And in her heart, she believes in the program. And because of that, I can never trust her again.
Sloan, James says, it's going to be okay. I won't let anything happen to you.
I meet his eyes.
Promise?
Yes.
Do you think you promised that before?
I want to tell him then, tell him about us. But he seems hurt that I asked him about before, like I've accused him of something.
If I'd promised you, Sloan, then they wouldn't have taken you to the program. I would have died trying to protect you. I wouldn't have let you down. I'd hate myself if I did.
He shakes his head as if he can get rid of the thought.
No, I'm promising it now, even if it means running away, hiding out for the rest of our lives. I promise I won't let anything happen to you. Can you trust that?
James's face is scared.
And I don't know what happened to land us in the program, but the truth is, we did let each other down one way or another. We didn't make it. But I have James back, here and now, as mine. I grab him by the collar of his shirt, letting the phone fall to the floor. I pull James to me, kissing him hard. His hand is in my hair as he kisses me back. The sky is darkening from the setting sun, but we climb into the back seat, yanking at each other's clothes, tongues tangling in a heat that I know I could never have with anyone else. This could be the last time I see him. This could be the end.
I think I broke my femur, James says as he lies underneath me. On the console when you were attacking me, I think I broke it.
I laugh. Shut up.
I didn't mind, though, he says conversationally. Like when you bit my shoulder. It was...
I reach up and put my hand over his mouth, not moving it, even after he licks my fingers. Shut up. As if agreeing, he pulls me closer, resting his cheek on the top of my head. When it's quiet, I move my palm and rest it on his chest.
It was nice, he whispers, but not jokingly. It wasn't weird either, and that's kind of weird.
I close my eyes. It's like we've been here before, I say quietly, wondering if he knows the truth. He doesn't answer, and I put my elbow in the corner of the seat, rising up to stare down at him. He smiles when I do, looking completely and utterly in love with me.
You brought protection, I say. Expecting this? No, he says, but it's good to be prepared.
You expected this.
I hoped, maybe.
James!
What, I got you a ring?
I'm still laughing as I lower my head to his neck, resting it there and letting the night fall around us. We've probably set off every red flag there is, and yet, I'm not sure I'd change any of it. Being here with James is just...
You're right, you know, he says. You're just right for me. And I'd bet my life that we've done this before. Because I can't imagine I wouldn't have fallen in love with you the first time.
I smile, looking at the pink ring on my finger, at the fading scar on my wrist, and I think that we've been through a lot to get here. And I'm never going back. Once we're dressed and driving again, James stops at the gas station to get us snacks, our improvised dinner. I called Lacey, but when she didn't pick up, I tried her house. Her mother said she was out on a date. I'm just hanging up when James returns with a paper bag filled with beef jerky and a map of local campsites. This is dangerous. We've screwed up pretty big, and yet we're not trying to change course. Clearly, we've both lost our minds. My thoughts turn to my parents. Even though I'm angry, I can imagine my father sitting on my bed, staring out my window, and wondering if I'm okay, or if I've killed myself. My mother is probably on the phone with the program, begging for them to save me. I've let them down, and obviously not for the first time. After all, they had thought the only course of action was the program. They let them change me.
Hey, James says quietly.
I look at him and see the way he watches me, filled with worry.
You're wasting perfectly good protein.
He motions to the Slim Jim in my hand and smiles, but it's forced. It's his way of calming me, I think. My phone buzzes in my pocket and I jump, startled. It's from a private number, I say when I look at it. Maybe it's Realm?
That would be awesome.
James murmurs, and opens his power bar to take a bite as we sit in the parking lot of the gas station. I don't respond, feeling guilty for not telling James about what happened, or almost happened, at Realm's house. I open the message. I need to see you immediately. When I repeat it to James, he scoffs. Of course he does. Realm knows about me and James, our past, so I don't think this is a social call. He must know that my parents are looking for me, or the program found out that he helped me and tracked him down. I'm suddenly scared for him. I have to go to Realm's house, I tell James quickly, moving to snap on my seatbelt. He tenses.
Why? I didn't kiss you good enough?
Hey! James winces.
Sorry, that was uncalled for. What I mean to say is, do you think he'll taste me on your lips?
Hey!
James closes his eyes, then looks at me apologetically. I'm not normally a jealous guy, I swear, he offers his explanation. At least, as far as I can remember. But when it comes to Michael Realm, I might be a little murderous, but just a little. He pinches his fingers together.
I'm not going to Realm's house to hook up. He needs to see me, James. He might be in trouble for helping me.
A real nice guy to drag you into his mess.
He's my friend. Can you not be a jerk about it?
James doesn't answer at first, just turns over the engine and pulls out into the street. Fine, he says, like he doesn't care either way. But if he kisses you, I'm gonna fight. I'm completely immature like that.
I know.
James exhales, checking his rear view to make sure no one is following us. Our time is running out. I'm not sure we can escape the program. Especially when I know that we couldn't before.
Chapter 14. My heart skips a beat when I see a black Escalade near Realm's house, the windows tinted too dark to see in. As James parks and turns off the engine, I wonder if I should be scared. What if this is a setup? Would Realm do that to me?
I don't like this, Sloane, James says, meeting my eyes. Whose car is that?
I shrug, but my hands are starting to shake. He wouldn't turn me in, I say, but I sound like I'm trying to convince myself. He knows a lot of stuff, and that message...
I look down at my lap, my throat beginning to constrict with fear.
It has to be important.
James puts his hand over mine.
Let's just leave. I'll take care of us.
When I look up, James's expression is desperate.
I know, but...
Just then, the front door of the house opens, and a woman walks out onto the porch as if she's been waiting for me. I recognize her immediately, even though she's not wearing sunglasses this time. She was there the day Realm was released from the program. The sight of her brings a sick feeling to my stomach, confirming that something is wrong. Where's Realm?
Is she from the program? James asks, putting his fingers on the key in the ignition, ready to turn it on.
No, I say. She picked Realm up from the program.
The woman puts her hands on her hips as if impatient, and I look at James.
I should talk to her, I say.
James groans. If I see anything strange, I'm getting us out of here. I'll throw you over my shoulder if I have to.
Like some crazed Neanderthal?
Total caveman.
I smile and lean forward to kiss his lips softly, nervously. And then I get out. The wind blows my hair around my face as I slowly approach the house, my heart thudding wildly in my chest. I half expect a handler to jump out from the bushes to grab me, inject me with a sedative. I take a nervous glance back at James, who is watching intently from the car.
Michael's not here, the woman calls as she waits for me to get to the porch. And he's not coming back. I take in a startled breath, stopping at the bottom of the steps. He's not coming back? My God, is he okay?
The woman tilts her head, looking me over.
He's fine. But like I said, he won't be back.
I look around, devastated that he'd just leave without telling me first. Without saying goodbye. I was just here yesterday.
Who are you? I ask the woman.
I'm Anna, Michael's sister. I take care of things when he's away.
She smiles at me then, sizing me up.
He said you were very pretty.
I'm staring at her, confused.
upset. I don't understand, I say. He just sent me a text. Why would he?
Anna holds up her hand to stop me. I sent the text, Sloane. Michael left this morning, but he wanted me to speak with you. He said you'd need him.
I do, I say. I'm in trouble, and I need him right now, so call him and tell him to come back.
Sloane, she says kindly, there's a lot you don't know about Michael, and his reasons for leaving, I promise, were out of his control. But he cares about you. He wants me to help you.
Realm always wanted to help me. He was all I had in the program. He was good, safe.
How are you going to help me?
There are things that Michael didn't tell you, things he doesn't think you could forgive. But he wants you to know that he loves you, that he wants you to be happy. She pauses and meets my eyes. But more than anything, he wants you to run.
Run?
Fear streaks down my back. I'm frozen in place, unsure of how to respond.
Anna looks past me toward the car.
Is that James? She asks, nodding toward him.
Yeah.
I search my memories, wondering if there will be a hidden clue to what's going on. But there's nothing. I'm completely lost.
My brother doesn't like him much. Anna smiles at this. But he understands.
Understands? I'm freaking out right now. What's going on?
Anna must hear in my voice that I'm done with the cryptic messages because she sighs, as if dreading this part.
They've been monitoring you, Sloane. Texts, phone calls, midnight drives. They came and saw Michael today, knowing that you were here last night. The minute they left, he called me to come by, said he was leaving, that he had no choice but to fulfill an obligation, let's say. But he knew you were in danger, you and James, so he left you some provisions. Even made me promise to give up my car. She laughs at this, but she doesn't seem bitter. My little brother can be fairly convincing when he needs to be. Then again, he's all I have left, and vice versa. I can understand that she would do this for her brother, knowing that no matter how crazy the request, I would have done anything for Brady. Realm had said that he didn't have anything outside the program. I wonder why he never told me he had a sister.
Kevin is a friend of ours, she continues, and when he got pulled off your case, Michael knew something was up.
Obviously, he was right. I'm sure you're aware that there is an Amber Alert out for the two of you right now. She motions to James.
What? No, I...
And now I know that I can't go home. That the flag has been thrown, and nothing can be the same again. Or at least, the same as it was a few weeks ago. I want to panic, but I'm trying to keep it together. I'm trying to be strong.
The epidemic is spreading, she says. Michael wants you to go east, says there's a group there that can help hide you. Kevin will help. He's been conspiring with your friend Lacey for some time. They know about the rebels.
Rebels? Against the program?
You don't have to be part of it. Michael never was. He honestly believed in the program, maybe even still does a little. But things are changing. He thought that your James might take up the cause. He says he's quite the troublemaker. We both look back at James then. He's behind the wheel, the phone to his ear as he argues with whoever is on the other end. His father? It's clear by the expression on his face that it's done, the life we had here. When he sees me watching, James's mouth stops moving and he lowers his phone. He knows they're looking for us too.
You should go, Anna says. The car has a few supplies, a little bit of money, and directions. Kevin will be waiting with Lacey at the rest stop on the Idaho border. Pick them up and leave the state. Michael will find you, she says. When he can, he'll find you.
I stare at her, seeing a small resemblance between her and Realm.
I'm about to wonder if I should trust her when I realize that I don't have any other options. This is our only hand to play. Anna gives me the keys to the car before starting to walk into the house. She pauses suddenly and turns to me. "Michael wanted me to give you one last thing," she says. She removes a small plastic bag from her coat pocket and holds it out to me. I take it and peek inside. There is one bright orange pill. "It's meant to bring back the lost memories," she says. "Some more quickly than others. Michael got his hands on it when he was in the program. He'd been saving it for when it was all over." She swallows hard. "But he wants you to have it instead. He has a warning, though." Anna takes a step closer to me, her eyes deadly serious. "He said that some things are better left in the past, and true things are destined to repeat themselves." I touch the small pill, wondering if it could have all that power, all the power to make me whole again. "He only gave me one?" I ask, thinking of James. "There is only one," she whispers, "and now it's yours. Michael is giving you the choice that the program didn't. But he was very clear that if you take this pill, you might never forgive him. You might hate him." And suddenly I wonder what secrets Realm has been keeping from me. "I could never hate him," I say, even though now I'm not so sure. Easy to say when you don't remember. She walks away then, pulling open the front door, but stopping to look back at me. "You'll be the only one who remembers, Sloane, and that in itself could be a curse. I hope you choose wisely. I'd hate to hear that you couldn't handle it, and terminated." She presses her lips into a sympathetic smile. "I think that sometimes the only real thing is now." I don't answer, and watch as she goes inside, leaving me on the darkened porch of my lost friend's house. I gaze down at the bag, my back to James, as I reach inside to take out the pill. I stare at it so long that my vision starts to tunnel, the color just a streak across my mental picture. I blink quickly and look at it again, wondering how it would change me, getting my life back. I'd remember Brady's death, feel that pain all over again. And then there's the life I had with James. I could take this pill and remember everything, but James still wouldn't. Can I really handle loving him completely when he is still so new to accepting us? Or what if we never really loved each other at all? What if Realm was wrong about that? I could give James the pill, but what if he finds some horrible truth about Brady or me or his mother? He could realize that there really isn't anyone to trust. Maybe we all betrayed each other. It's like I hold a lifetime in my fingers. I'd be complete, but at the same time, what if I don't like who I was? I look to the sky where the sun has set, leaving the clouds streaked in the same shade of orange as the pill. Realm has given me a gift, a choice. He's given me his friendship, his love, and in my way, I love him back. But he said I wouldn't forgive him for the things I'd find lost in my head. Do I believe that? Do I believe him? Tears race down my cheeks, and I stare down, one small object so full of information. Life. Loss. Right now, I have what I need. I have James, a way out of here. But this could all be a lie, a hanging string to be pulled, unraveling everything. Can I stand knowing what happened to my brother that day? James and I were there, but we hadn't stopped it. There's the slash on my wrist, the way my mother looks at me, filled with concern and knowledge. God, what if I was a horrible person? Maybe that's why I wanted to die. Maybe I was the reason James wanted to die.
A small whimper escapes my lips as I let the pill drop back into the bag. I want to crush it under the heel of my shoe, but I'm terrified that I'll change my mind later. So I fold the bag into a small plastic square and stuff it into the back pocket of my jeans. I won't take it, but I won't destroy it either. At least, not yet. And with that choice, my heart breaks. I'm saying goodbye to who I used to be, who I can never really be again. The people I once knew are different. Some are changed like me, others are dead. Knowing that can only bring me more pain, more agony. I miss Realm, and I'm glad I won't know what he doesn't want me to remember. This way, I'll forever keep him as my friend and hero. There's nothing wrong with that. This is the only choice. I straighten my posture as I glance down the driveway to where James is parked, loving me madly. Loving me for who I am now. We'll meet Lacey and Kevin and sneak away, start over somewhere else. We'll leave our parents, our lives, but most of all, we'll leave the reach of the program. And as I walk back to the car, the pill safely tucked away in my pocket, I think that maybe Realm is wrong, that James isn't the only troublemaker, the only one willing to take up the cause. He's not the only one who wants to fight. So with that thought, I begin again, thinking to myself that sometimes, the only real thing is now. Epilogue, 2 weeks later. At the door of the leisure room, the girl pauses. Her body hums from the latest round of medication, and she looks wearily at the handler near the door. The Roseburg facility is crowded and loud, and the girl swallows hard and turns to the nurse next to her. "I want to stay in my room," she mumbles. Nurse Kell smiles, her face filled with compassion as she brushes the girl's strawberry blonde hair off her shoulder. "Why don't you try and make friends, Allison? It's good for your recovery." Allie scoffs. "What's good for my recovery is going home." Her voice is loud, and several patients and handlers look over. Allie notices a guy at the table, a pretzel stick dangling from his lips like a cigar, staring at her. "William," Nurse Kell says softly, "I think I may need assistance." Her voice is curt, and when Allie notices that she's motioned to the handler, she backs away. "No," Allie says quickly. "I'm sorry, I..." "There you are, sweetness," a voice says. Allie turns around just as the guy takes the pretzel from his mouth, looping his arm in hers. "I thought we were playing cards today." He widens his eyes, as if telling her to go along with it. Allie shoots a look at Nurse Kell, and then the guy next to her clears his throat. He glares daggers at the handler, and William backs away, raising his hands almost apologetically. "Right," Allie says, nodding quickly, tightening her grip on the guy's arm. "Sorry I'm late." "It's okay," he grins, "but now you owe me." He nods at the nurse, and she rolls her eyes at him, as if he's always doing things like this. Then the guy pulls Allie toward the table, where two others sit, holding cards. "Ah, come on," one of the boys yells, slapping down his hand. "You're always trying to bring in girls, Realm." "Yeah, yeah," he responds, "but look how nice this one looks." He turns and winks at Allie, pulling out a chair for her. She sits down, her heart racing at the thought of being thrown into isolation again. She wants to go home, but there doesn't seem to be a way. This guy, though, he seems to have it figured out. He's probably a good person to know in here. Allie looks him over then. His hair is bleached blonde, washing out his pale skin just a little. His eyes are a deep brown and very kind. He's cute. Not that she should really notice in a place like this. And on his neck, she sees a jagged pink scar, healed
but still dramatic. She feels a pang of sympathy for him.
"What's the game?"
she asks quietly.
"Bullshit," Realm answers. "You know it?"
"No." Allie shakes her head.
"Hmm."
He looks around at the guys.
"How about asshole?"
Allie smiles, remembering how she'd taught her best friend's little sister to play last summer. The summer before her best friend killed herself. "Yeah," she says, lowering her head. "I know that one pretty well."
"Realm?"
A voice cuts through the leisure room, and Allie looks up, startled to see a girl walking toward them. Her hair is a bright orange, and she seems unsteady. Allie wonders how much medication she's on.
"Hello, Tabby," Realm mumbles.
"You said I could play."
The girl's voice is angry, and then she notices Allie sitting there.
"How come she's here?"
"Sorry," Realm says, touching Tabitha's arm. "Table's full. Next time, okay?"
Allie considers leaving, feeling bad for shutting out this girl who clearly needs the game more than she does. When she goes to stand, she feels Realm's hand touch hers.
"Stay," he says.
His steady eyes meet hers, and she sits back down. After the other girl is gone, Allie gnaws on her lip, feeling bad.
"It's okay," Realm says, as if reading her thoughts. "Tabby always asks to play, but we don't let her. She won't mess with you, though. In fact, tomorrow she'll be here asking all over again."
He lowers his voice, leaning his head toward hers.
"Quick death," he whispers. "It gave her short-term memory loss."
"Oh." Allie fidgets uncomfortably as Realm shuffles the cards, introducing her to Shep and Derek, saying they've been here 2 weeks and will be out in 4. Same with Realm. But they look comfortable with each other, as if they've done this a million times. Outside, a storm is blowing wind and rain against the windows, sounding as if the world around her is washing away. Allie has felt this way before, just today even. Dr. Warren told her she was being difficult, that measures would have to be taken if she didn't start cooperating. But now, watching these boys play with a sort of calmness, normalness to them, Allie wonders if maybe she can make it, if she can beat the program.
"Your place, Sloane," Realm says, putting another pretzel between his lips.
"Allie," she looks sideways at him.
"My name is Allison."
She notices the pained look that crosses Realm's features, breaking his controlled expression. But then he looks at her, all smiles again.
"Sorry," he says. "My medication cocktail must have been a little too strong today." "Allison," he continues, "your play."
Allie nods and puts down her next card, noticing the warning glances the other guys give Realm. Shep mouths, "Shut up." But Realm doesn't say anything back. He stares through the window at the storm outside, a faint smile on his lips. But by the time the game is over, Allie half thinks she imagined all the tension, because the boys are laughing and calling each other assholes. Everyone is content, almost dreamlike. Or maybe it was the pill Nurse Kel made Allie take. She can't be sure. And later, when Realm asks Allie if he can walk her home, she laughs, feeling the first bit of hope in a long time.
The program was written by Suzanne Young and read by Joy Osmanska. Editing and post-production by Matt Cartzonis. The associate producer was Ben Rimmelauer. The program was produced and directed by Matt Cartzonis. The program is available in hardcover from Simon Plus. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Hi, this is Suzanne Young, author of the audiobook, The Program. The Program is set in an alternate reality where teen suicide has become an epidemic, a behavioral contagion. To combat the worsening epidemic, the government created the program, a therapy that erases all of your bad memories, sending you back as clean, but empty, slate. The main characters, Sloan and James, are a couple who have had a long history, both love and tragedy, and they'll do anything they can to keep from being erased from each other's lives. The idea for the program came about gradually. I had borrowed from several of my unfinished books, A Girl Falling in Love with Her Brother's Best Friend, A Pill to Take Away Feelings, Life After a Suicide Attempt. Eventually, I found a plot that I could utilize all three of these storylines. The program is personal to me, and I wanted to explore the depths of depression, of love, and of spirit and courage. I made suicide a centerpiece of the program because I feel like I understand the feeling, that absolute darkness that can lead to suicidal thoughts. There's something crushing and isolating. And as a backdrop to this story, I thought it gave the characters something to fear from within as well as from outside of themselves with the program. There's nothing flip about suicide and this sort of despair, and I wanted it to be a real conflict. The program erases who you are, your past, but at the same time, they are the only cure for the suicide epidemic, and I thought that that would make really high stakes for a good story. Sloan and James, in my opinion, are perfectly flawed for each other. I haven't seen a couple like them before, and I definitely didn't try to make them seem perfect. They argue, they make up, they love each other to a point that actually puts them both in danger. So I wasn't writing role models. I was writing about a love that was so strong that it became the hope in this otherwise dark novel. And so I think the inspiration for me writing them the way I did was that they were flawed, but they also were like this bit of light in such a dark place. Realm was meant to be the friend who would find you at just the right moment and save your life. And the fact that he's funny and single and brave, I think, would be attractive to anyone in Sloan's position. It's the readers that kind of fall for Realm instead of Sloan, and they make the love triangle. I definitely had the most fun writing James, mostly because his lines of dialogue cracked me up. I think his sort of charm is a little bit raunchy sometimes, but it was kind of fun to write a character who could be so cocky in one moment and then so deep and serious in the next. As a high school English teacher and mother of two, I have realized that my time has become very limited. I used to write full-time, and now that I am teaching, I tend to use some of my prep periods for a little bit of writing. I also take extended weekend trips to the local hotel where I order a lot of room service and write. But usually that's just when I'm on deadline. Otherwise, I type while my kids are running around, and I've learned to kind of cut out the voices. When I write dialogue, I tend to read it out loud. I say it out loud as I write it. And then whenever I need to recheck, if it sounds like something somebody would say, I always read it out loud. When it comes to new ideas I have, I always kind of run it by my students just to kind of get their reaction. I would write them either way, but they like to hear my new ideas. They especially love when I have a first chapter written of something new, so I usually use them as kind of my practice focus group, I guess you would say. So I do read some of my work aloud, but mostly just the beginning, and then I start to trust myself with it, except for dialogue. I'm so excited to hear the audiobook of the program. I definitely had voices in my head for the characters, especially James. Maybe that's just because, in a way, I always kind of have the main character, even though they're not me. They always kind of have that voice, that deeper kind of voice. So Sloan's kind of set. But James, I'm hoping he's just very charming. That's in my mind. He was very charming and funny, and I think he has some great lines of dialogue. And then for Realm, I imagine him to be kind of light at first, something like this kind of voice that's very kind of trustworthy and soft-spoken in a way. The next and final book in the program series is called The Treatment. It picks up immediately where book one left off, but right away we're introduced to a new cast of characters as Sloan and James meet up with the rebels. You're never quite sure who to trust, and the entire book is a long chase scene, danger awaiting every stop. Realm returns, but his secrets go deeper than they could have ever imagined. And through it all, the program will do anything to get Sloan and James back, but this time, they don't just want their memories. What they have planned is much more sinister.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.